there's a beautiful running explanation of the Netziv to the story of Korach, which really puts everything into a much clearer perspective and also helps explain some very subtle yet very basic questions that he picks up on in the Pesukim. So just to open up the Netziv, notes the following few questions. He says that the very opening pasuk of the parsha says, "Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kos ben Levi, v'dason va'aviram b'nei Eliyav, v'on ben Pelas b'nei Reuven." That Korach and Dason and Aviram and On all vayikach is the verb. Okay, so there's one question in that pasuk: what does vayikach mean? Unklus translates it that they separated themselves. Rashi as well quotes that he set himself aside to oppose the rest of the people. However, the Nesiv asks a very basic question. However you explain Vayikach, it should say Vayikchu. Why Vayikach? It's Korach, it's Dasan Aviram, and it's Own, Ben Pelas. So why is it Vayikach? It should say Vayikchu. That's his first question. Second question he has on the story. Namely? That is what he's going to say. But this question is one of a bigger package. So there's more to it. That's correct. You are correct. He's going to get to that. His second question, though, is that if you look at the story, so they and the 250 Nisi'ei Eda complain to Moshe and Aaron, why are you taking all the prominent positions, the Kahuna, the Malchus? Moshe hears this, he falls on his face, he speaks to Korach and to his people, saying, Zos asu, here's going to be the test. Kuchulachem machtos Korach b'chol adoso. Turn it off. On the side. Kuchulachem machtos Korach b'chol adoso. He says, take these fire pans, put fire in it, put kataris in it, and whoever God chooses, that's the kadosh, that's the one who is the holy one. So who was Moshe offering this deal to? It was Kechulachem Machtos Korach B'chol Adoso. He spoke to Korach and to all of his people. And yet, when the Pasuk later on describes who brought the Ketores, so who is in fact included in this test of the Ketores? It says in Pasuk Tes Zayin, Vayomer Moshe al Korach, Moshe says to Korach, Ata v'chol adascha, you and your people, heyu l'fnei Hashem, you should come before God. Ata v'hem v'aharon machar, you, them, and Aaron tomorrow. So who's that? So it says in Pasuk Yitzayin, Ukhu yish machtaso, take your fire pans, put kataris in it, bring it to before God. 250 fire pans, v'ata v'aron ish machtaso, plus you and Aaron. So what's the problem? What's the question? He's telling Korach, you and all your people, bring your fire pans to before God tomorrow. A total of Hamishim Masai Machtos, 250, and you, meaning Korach, and Aaron.
So is Aaron in the mix?
What?
Is Aaron in the mix?
Well, no, because Aaron has to be part of the mix, right? Because, you know, who's God going to choose? The question that Siv asks is that somebody's noticeably absent. Or some people are noticeably absent.
Dasan
Aviram. And perhaps even Omen Pelas. Dawson and Yirma absence.
Omen Pelas really
did. What?
Omen Pelas is absent for his wife.
Right, okay, fine. So we'll leave him back. Correct. Now his wife pulled him back. Fine. But Dawson and Yirma are two of the ringleaders, and yet they're not included. You know, it's the pasuk, the parsha began with Korach, Dawson and Yirma, Omen Pelas, plus 250. And when it comes down to the Ketores, the test of the Ketores, it's Aaron, Korach, and 250. What happens to Dawson and Yirma? Very basic question. Finally, the Netziv asks an equally obvious, very, very basic question. And that is, after all said and done, the 250 men bring their ktores before the Mishkan, and what happens to them? They're incinerated on the spot. Right, the Pasuk says, they bring their ktores, Ve'esh yotza me'esh Hashem v'tochol esh ha'mishim v'masayim ish makrivei ha'ktaris. Fire emanates from God, consumes these 250 guys. And immediately afterwards, God tells Moshe, tell Elazar HaKohen to take the fire pans from the flames. Ki kadeshu, they're holy. What should you do with them? Bang them into some sort of covering for the Mizbeach. Ki hikrivim lefnei Hashem, because they brought them before God. Vayigdash, they became sanctified. So, Netziv asks, you know, that seems to be pretty, you know, respected legacy in a certain sense. Meaning you're treating them with a certain sense of respect here. Now, the truth is, he doesn't mention it with regard to the fact that their machtos were taken as a cover for the Mizbeach. He says that the wording used in describing their death, ve'esh yotza me'esh Hashem, a fire emanates from before God, v'tochal esach ha'meshim ha'masayim ish, it consumes them. What is that reminiscent of? What? More specifically? Nadavan Aviyu. The exact same lashon as Nadavan Aviyu. What's the lashon? I have the chumash here. V'teitzei esh, I think, m'lefnei Hashem. V'teitzei esh m'lefnei Hashem. A fire emanates from before God, and it consumes them. So the very, very same terminology is used by Nadav and Abihu and by the Chamish and Masayim Ish. Now, I don't think he specifies this, but the same question could be asked about, you know, the fact that their machtos were taken and used as a cover for the Mizbeach. This is how you reward, you know, Korach's men by taking their machtos and putting them in the most kadosh place in Klal Yisrael. You know, how does that follow? So that's a very, very, very obvious question. True. It doesn't. It says that they were makrivei haketores. How far did they actually get?
Because they showed up there with ketores, and then
right, they're holding. They had the fire and the ketores in their pans. So that itself was a hakravas haketores. It wasn't done on the mizbeach per se. It says they took their machtos, they placed fire and ketores on them. Vayam du pesach olmoy. They stood by the entrance of the olmoy. So they didn't place it on the mizbeach, but they were bringing it pretty close. So the obvious question is, why are we rewarding them? Why are we, you know, why are we enshrining their legacy on the Mizbeach, of all places, after who they followed, what they did, seems so counterintuitive. What's the pshat? Netziv has a fascinating mahalach. He says the following. He says, number one, it's worth noting that from this entire gang, Korach, Dasan, Aviram, 250 men, there were three different consequences for three different groups of people. Meaning, or there were different consequences for the two types of people. There was, number one, the opening of the earth swallowed up Korach and Dasan Aviram. And on the other hand, the Chamisha Masayim Ish, they died how? Ve'esh Yotza Me'esh Hashem, in the fire. So the fact that they died in two different manners is itself, worth noting, says Netziv. That Korach and Dasan Aviram died one way, and the 250 men died a different way. So what does that all indicate? So Netziv suggests that indicates the following. He says the 250 people who died were in fact, unlike Dasan and Aviram, unlike Korach, they were motivated purely l'shem shemayim. They were motivated for more dveikus, greater as a result of their incredible avas Hashem. They were gedolei Yisrael, they were nesiyei ha'eda, they were yirei shemayim, and they had tremendous avas Hashem. They wanted more dveikus b'Hashem. And that's why the terminology used to describe how they died is used to describe also Nadav and Aviyu, the exact same thing. Nadav and Aviyu also were motivated l'shem shemayim for this, for the right reason. So that itself is a very, very important point. And with that, he has another a fascinating explanation. If you look after they died, after the 250 men died, what happens? Immediately after they die, the pasuk says in Perek Zayin, pasuk Vav, "Vayilonu kol adas b'nei Yisrael mimachras al Moshe va'al Aaron le'mor." Atem hamitem es am Hashem. The Jews all complain against Moshe now, and you guys killed God's people. So what's going on here? I mean, they just saw what happened to Korach. Korach was evil and deserved to die. But they're complaining that Moshe and Aaron killed God's people. What's going on? How could they be so blind to the fact that Korach deserved his fate? So Nitziv says so beautifully. He says, who are they complaining about? Atem hamitem es am Hashem. You killed God's people. They're not complaining about Korach, Dustin and Avir. They're complaining about the 250 Nesi HaEda, because they recognize that these were Gedolei Yisrael who had Kavanah L'Shem Shemayim, and they're complaining, why did you give them this dangerous test of the Ketores, knowing full well that it would kill them if these people are really, really L'Shem Shemayim motivated? On the other hand, says the Netziv, if you look in Sefer Devarim, Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Vav, a fascinating proof. There in Sefer Devarim, Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Vav, the Torah, Moshe is reviewing with Klal Yisrael all the amazing wonders and nisim that God did for Klal Yisrael. Now, you're supposed to love God because of all the incredible things He did for you. Took you out of Mitzrayim, all the amazing wonders He performed in Mitzrayim, and that long list of amazing wonders that God performed, it says, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed up Dasan and Aviram. Implying that that was something that they were grateful for. Here, on the other hand, they're saying, complaining, you killed God's people. So clearly they're talking about two different people. They're grateful for the death of Dasan and Aviram, but they're complaining about the death of the Reish Nun, the Masayim v'Chamishim, or Chamishim v'Masayim Ish. So what's the difference? So the Chamishim v'Masayim Ish, they're the Gedolei Yisrael, the Nesi Ha'eza, motivated L'Shem Shemayim. So Klal Yisrael were upset that they died. Dasan and Aviram, who they were happy died, they were, you know, the perennial old-time Balei Machlokas. Everybody knew these guys were no goodniks. I mean, everyone knew that these guys were the biggest troublemakers. Nobody liked them. So in that sense, there's one very, very basic distinction drawn between those two categories of people. The Nitziv then says, with this pshat as well, he says, another fascinating raya, in Parshas Pinchas, a pasuk which, you know, whenever you see it, you run through it, thinking, yeah, it's just saying the same thing in different words. But the way the Nitziv reads it, it really takes on added meaning. Pasuk in Parshas Pinchas, read through, says the following. When the Torah in Parshas Pinchas, it goes through the yichus of some of the Shvatim. So it says, the yichus of the Shvatim. It says in Perek Chavav, pasuk Tess. It says the sons of Eliav were Nemuel, Dasan, and Aviram. And it says, who Dasan va'Aviram? Kriye Ho'eda. They were Dasan and Aviram. Asher Hitsu al Moshe v'al Aharon, who incited against Moshe and Aaron. Behatzos ba'adas Korach, with the people of Korach. Behatzosam al Hashem, when they incited against God. So when you read that pasuk, you think, okay, it's Dasan Aviram, Adas Korach. All together, they were complaining against Moshe, complaining against God. Tziv says, no, it's two different things here. Hu Dasan va'Aviram asher hitzu al Moshe va'al Aaron. That's one category. Ba'Adas Korach, together with the Adas Korach, a second category. Behatzosam al Hashem, they, the Adas Korach, were complaining against God. Meaning what? Dasan and Aviram were just hated Moshe and Aaron. They were just Balei Machlokas. They hated Moshe and Aaron. But the rest of Adas Korach, the 250 guys who came with Korach, they weren't against Moshe and Aaron per se. They were complaining against God. You know, we want to come close to you also. We want a piece of this as well. So he sees in that pasuk that very difference between Dasan and Aviram and Adas Korach. Then finally, the last point that Nitziv makes is the following. He says, he says, there's a famous medrash quoted by Rashi. Rashi, I think it's in Pasuk Zion. Rashi quotes the famous medrash, which asks as follows. The medrash says, Rashi quotes, the Korach shepikeachaya, Korach who was so smart, ma ra'al ishtos zel, why do you get involved in this ridiculousness? So the Medrash says, his eyes misled him. He saw his descendants who were so prominent, Shmuel Hanavi, and he figured that I'll be rescued in his merit. Okay, that's Rashi according to the Medrash. Says the Netziv, but if you look in the Medrash has an additional point there. The Medrash says, what about the Reish Nun Ish? What about the 250 guys who joined with Korach? Lo Tipshim Hayu? Weren't they also foolish? So with them, the Medrash says, no. Heim Chatu B'Nafsho Sam. They sinned B'Nafsho Sam. Because the Pasuk says in Korach, Machtos HaChatoim Ha'ela, the firepans of these sinners, B'Nafsho Sam, who sinned with their nefashos, with their nefesh. But Korach, the Medrash asks, what was he thinking? So it's Medrash saying. Medrash saying, Korach, we don't understand what he was thinking. But the 250 people who followed him, they were chote b'nafshosam. What does that mean? How do you make sense of that?
There was a reason for they did.
Right, but what does that mean, chote b'nafshosam?
Specifically, you said initially.
Yeah.
They had a desire for to get what they had.
So then Tzid quotes, again, a similar lashon found in the Chumash, v'chiper olav me'asher chata al hanefesh. Another mention of sinning al hanefesh. What context is that found in? V'chiper olav me'asher chata al hanefesh. That is found in the context in Parshas Noso with regard to a Nazir. A Nazir who becomes Tameh, it says, V'chiper olav me'asher chata al hanefesh. Perek Vav Pasuk Yud Aleph. Why is the same phrase used by Nazir, sinning by becoming Tameh, and by the 250 men, where it says in our parasha, Shechatu b'nafsho sam, in both cases, Chata al hanefesh, and Chatu b'nafsho sam, what's the connection? So once again, says in Itziv, exact same idea. The Nazir, what was his fault? He tried to become too kadosh, too tahar. He tried to become too much of an ascetic, too much of a holy person beyond his means, beyond what he was really ready for. These 250 people also, they're the Mechav and the Shem Shemayim. They wanted more Kedusha, more Tara, more Tzedekas, but they weren't on that Madrega. So in both cases, the Torah uses the same phrase, Chatu al Chata al HaNefesh, or HaChataim Ha'ela B'Nafsho Sam. They're a remarkable, remarkable diak in the Psukim. So, in Siv, this one Mahalach answers so many different questions. That there was a different punishment for the 250 men than there was for Dasan Avirim. Dasan Avirim were Balei Machlokas, they hated Moshe and Aaron. 250 men, you know, were L'Shem Shemayim, they were complaining against God, so to speak. How come we can't be Zochet to Kahuna, to Dveikos like Moshe and Aaron are? Therefore they died in a different manner, like Nodav and Aviyu. That's why they're called Chato'im B'Nafsho Sam, like the Nazir, who's Chata al Nefesh. He tried to go too far beyond his means in his striving for Kedusha and for Tara. And finally he says, that's why the 250 guys were treated respectfully. Perhaps that's why their machtos were put on the Mizbeach. In other words, we honor them for what they wanted, but they did it wrong, they did it incorrectly, so they suffered, they were punished. Finally he says, why Vayikach Korach, like you said, Shalom, because Korach was the instigator here. Why? The 250 men are not going to get involved in Lashon Hara, right? They're too much of Kedoshim for that. Dasan Avirim, no one's going to listen to them. Everyone knows they're no good next to Balei Machlokas. But Korach, who was a Gadol Hador, he was someone who had the influence, who had the ability to influence Klal Yisrael, to draw them to his side. He just used Dasan Avirim as his middleman to rile up the masses, to draw them after him.
So you're saying that 250 people were actually the Shem Shemayim?
They were the Shem Shemayim, correct.
Really? Though?
They were, yeah, 100%, yes. Korach, though, the Medrash asks, had he get involved in this shtus? He was too much of a pekeach to know not to reach beyond his reach in terms of Kedusha and Tara. So with him, the Medrash says, it was a momentary surge of kinna, of desire for kavod that misled him. So you have Dasan and Avirim, who are the extreme Balei Machlokas, forever and forever hating Moshe, picking a fight. You have the 250 men who are the Tzadikim, Gedolei Hador, who really wanted Kedusha, but unfortunately went too far beyond what they were allowed to go for. And yet Korach, who was momentarily misled by his kinna, by his desire for Kavod, who got them all together.
Would it be the wrong thing to say then that the people were actually in the wrong place at the wrong time?
They went along with the wrong person for the wrong reasons. Meaning
let's say they had done this on a different day of the week.
Let's say they what?
Let's say they decided to
No, they would have been wrong in doing this anytime they did this.
Right.
But they only were riled up to do it by Korach. Meaning Korach played on their desire for more Tzveikus and more Kedusha by saying it's not right that they have it, not you. Meaning on their own, they probably wouldn't have gotten involved in it. Meaning on their own, it seems like they would not have gotten this far in their... They might have been upset, but they wouldn't have acted on it in this manner. But Korach was able to get work on their resentment or bitterness and rile it up to get them to action. No, their bitterness was L'Shem Shemayim, and they were enticed to act also L'Shem Shemayim. But you know, but on their own, they might not have gone that far with that desire. All right, that's just a very very basic mahalach of the Netziv. Understand what happened here in the parasha. Okay, let's move on to a couple of beautiful thoughts. On the parasha, the first is a famous vart, but it's so basic, and cannot be forgotten. Beautiful thought. It's a question that's raised by many, discussed by many. I saw it in Rabbi Pelkowitz's English Sefer on Parsha. Rabbi Sachs, Jonathan Sachs, had an article on this as well. A very very blatant question in the parasha. After all of Korach and his men die, suffer terrible consequences and punishments, the Bnei Yisrael are still complaining, right? They're still complaining. Atem hamitem es am Hashem, you killed God's people. Right? They're still upset. They haven't learned to, you know, relax, step back. Don't start with Moshe and Aaron. And the wording used in the pasuk is vayilonu, that same complaining, bitter resentment. A time I meet them as Am Hashem, you killed God's people. It's almost reminiscent of the way Dasan and Aviram were complaining in the beginning of the parasha that you brought us here Lahamisenu Bamidbar to kill us in the desert. You know, so how could Bnei Israel, you know, still complain after all that they just saw happen to Korach and to his men? How could they start up? And furthermore, what's also remarkable is that after the entire story of Korach comes to its conclusion, the mitzvah that God then instructs Aaron HaKohen about is all about the Chaf Dalad Mishmaros Kahuna, or the Chaf Dalad Matnas Kahuna. Right after the story of Korach is done, and almost for the rest of the parsha, just about the entire second half of the parsha is all about the Chavdal Matnas Kahuna. That you, Kohanim, you're going to get the Trumos, you're going to get the Bechor, you're going to get the Chazav Ashok of the Karbonos, you're going to get the Karbon Chatas, the Karbon Asham, and the Shalmei Tzibor. You're going to get all of these things that the Jews are going to have to give you. It's all yours. Isn't that timing pretty awful? You just have like a terrible schism in the Jewish nation. People complaining bitterly, why do Moshe and Aaron, why does Aaron get the Kahuna? Why is he special? Why does no one else get it? And boom, right after that has led to the deaths of like over 14,000 Jews, God now says, okay, first mitzvah we're going to discuss right now is how much the Kohanim get over everybody else. 24 different matanos of kahuna, bikurim, truma, different types of the parts of the animals, of the karbanos. Was it a stick it to them? Like, you know, is that, what?
Lock it in.
Meaning, lock it in. Meaning, you just rebelled against this, I'm going to now just reinforce it. Okay, that's true. That is true. That is one of the explanations given. Rashi quotes that from the Medrash. Rashi says that, you know, a king gives a piece of property to a very close friend of his, and someone else comes and tries to say that it's his. So, you know, the king says, let anyone who wants to complain, I'm going to stand up and state clear that I gave it to you, not to anybody else. So you're right. So Rashi's saying, Pashim Shad is that, you know, God, after seeing that people are complaining against the selection of Aaron and his children as Kohanim, saying, okay, I'm going to, you know, confirm this, reaffirm this, lock it in, make sure it's not open for debate any longer. Okay, that definitely is one shot which Rashi quotes in the Medrash. However, some of the contemporary Balei Musar offer this following beautiful explanation. They say the following. They say, notice what happens after the Jews complained about Moshe killing God's people, and before God gives this instruction about the Chaf Dalad Matanos of Kahuna. What happens in the middle? What happens in the middle is God telling Moshe, let every prince of every tribe hand in their mata, their stick, 12 different sticks for each tribe, including Aaron for Shevet Levi, put them in the Mishkan, in the Olam Moed, and whoever I choose, his stick will miraculously produce blossoms and buds, and that's going to prove once and for all my selection. And so it was, Aaron's mata produces flowers and buds and almonds. So what's the significance of that? So Baal Musa said the following. The sequence of the parsha is, first, there was rebellion, there was complaint, there was fight, there was tension, there was disagreement, followed by terrible, serious consequences, punishment, death, plague, thousands died. Jews complain to Moshe, you're killing God's people. Then comes the test of the staffs. And then comes God saying, okay, this is what you're going to give the Kohanim from now on. Bikurim, Truma, Korbanos, etc. What's the lesson? The lesson, they say, very simply, is the following. Whenever you try to deal with machlokas by meeting out punishment, brute force, you know, imposing your own resolution or solution on the basis of force, never, ever, ever works. It will just breed further resentment. Korach, 250 people, Dathan Aviram, they were killed, 14,000 plus wiped out in Magepha. What did it lead to? Atam Hamitam Esam Hashem, further complaints, further resentment, you're killing God's people. What happens then? Then comes the soft approach. Let's see who is successful in productivity. Let's see who's able to produce. Let's see who's matzah flowers and produces almonds and flowers and buds. Immediately following that, apparently everyone's okay with it. And then God can say, okay, you give chafdal matanos to the Kohanim and not a peep, not a complaint. Very beautiful thought. It reminded me of a vort that my grandfather would often quote based on the Rambam in Hilchos Trumos Perek Aleph and Hilchos Beis HaBechira Perek Vav. The Rambam says, why is it that Kedusha Rishona, the first sanctity of Eretz Yisrael that was endowed by Yehoshua when he brought Klal Yisrael in from Mitzrayim to Eretz Yisrael, that Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael was nullified with the first Chorban Beis HaMikdash? Yet the second time Klal Yisrael re-entered Eretz Yisrael, rebuilt the Beis HaMikdash, re-sanctified Eretz Yisrael with Ezra HaSofer coming back from Bavel, that's called Kedusha Shniya. That we pass in Kedusha Shniya, Kidshila Shaita, Vikidshila Asid Lavo. The second sanctity remains intact, even after the Churban Bayis Sheni. So the Rambam asks, why is that? Why is it that the first Kedusha that Eretz Yisrael was endowed with by Yehoshua, that was null and void when the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed with Golas Bavel? Yet the second Kedusha that was endowed by Ezra HaSofer when he brought the Jews back for the second Beis HaMikdash, that Kedusha's Eretz Yisrael stayed on forever, even after the Churban Bayis Sheni. What's the difference, says the Rambam? So Rambam says very beautifully, because the first conquest of Eretz Yisrael by Yehoshua was done through military might. It was done through kibush. You're taking Eretz Yisrael through kibush, through military might. Okay, the minute you're kicked out, no more military victory, you're out of there, your Kedusha goes with you. But the second conquest of Eretz Yisrael by Ezra HaSofer, that's not done through military battle and victory. How was it done? Not through kibush, not through military conquest, says the Rambam, but through chazaka. It was done by cultivation. They were allowed back in, they slowly rebuilt, replanted, reunited in Eretz Yisrael. A slower, more gradual, yet more peaceful process. Kedusha that is created and fostered through a more peaceful, tranquil, slower process, says the Rambam, that lasts forever. My grandfather quoted Chaim Brisker, who said that's pshat in Zechariah, Perek Dalad. Lo b'chayil v'lo b'koach ki im beruchi. At the second Beis HaMikdash, it's not going to be b'chayil or b'koach, it's not going to be through might or strength, but through the Ruach Hashem, through the spirit of Kedushas Hashem, through peaceful recultivation, so to speak. So my grandfather wrote this in context of Hanukkah. He said, why is it that the Gemara and Shabbos stresses the miracle of the oil as opposed to the miracle of the military victory? Could be. So he says, the pshat is because the military victory, that's kibush, that's military conquest. That might be short-lived. The Gemara is trying to emphasize to us that what's really important, what's really long-lasting, are the spiritual growth and improvements that are brought about as a result of a slower, more peaceful cultivation process, such as represented by the miracle of the oil. So that's the pshat here by Korach as well. You know, the Jews weren't able to happily accept, you know, forceful resolution, but proof of productivity and cultivation and a, you know, more constructive approach that they're able to accept happily. The same can be applied, I saw this farm say, to chinuch habanim, raising kids. You try to enforce something with brute force, it's not going to last. The minute your brute force is no longer a compelling factor, the kids are not interested. Right? A parent who rules by force and forces a kid to learn, forces a kid to daven, forces a kid to do mitzvahs. The moment the kid's a teenager and is ready to rebel, you know, he'll take the first opportunity to do so. That's kibush. It only lasts so long as you're in charge. But when there's chazaka in chinuch habanim, when there's slower, more peaceful, more gradual inspiration, motivation, cultivation, then that lasts even after you're no longer in charge, even after you're no longer there. The results still carry on. Very beautiful pshat. I remember in one of our pastoral psychology courses in the Kollel. Yeah.
I mean, take what Marvin said about face value. It's like a cram den. I mean, you're really sticking it to the Nesorah.
Yes, correct. So that's what Rashi quotes the Medrash to say.
It's like philosophers do not focus on those.
So the pshat according to this teretz is that it was that mitzvah of chaf dal matnas kahuna was given after the mate of Aaron was.
The mate of Aaron even forces them to focus even further.
No, because that was a proof that was not done through punishment. That was a proof done through success. See who succeeds. Let's see who can produce the results. Because that people are more willing to see. They won't see what works, who works. Meaning, for example.
Because the whole issue over here. Aaron is super. He gets everything. This and that.
No, okay. But the mashal Pelkowitz uses is, let's say, you know, throwing rocks like people driving on Shabbos is not going to make them become Shomer Shabbos. Show them the beauty of a Shabbos. Show them how, you know, a Shabbos home will ultimately inspire children to carry on. And, you know, and according to Minhag Yisrael, you know, show them success, show them productivity, show them positive results that they're more willing to see and to be impressed by. So it's a similar idea here. You know, that you show somebody productivity, positive results. No, that's going to work. Show them, you know, I have brute force. It's not going to work long term. What he's saying essentially is that the Mate Aaron being Yotze Tzitz is essentially just a paradigm of productivity, of success, that, you know, prove ourselves through our own success. That's all it is.
Wouldn't it have been better to involve all of Nagy's realm or something?
Well,
you're still showing after this
Aaron
is still the elite. So there's still
going
to be that sense of
animosity. You haven't done anything to quell that. Well, if the animosity was a result of...
I mean, the entire issue of
Korach
was that you're keeping everything to yourself.
Okay, so I guess you could say that they thought that Moshe and Aaron were the ones who took it
for
themselves, and now it's God showing that he's
the
one behind it.
There's no question about that, but still, I mean, it doesn't do anything to lessen the man on the street from saying, they still got it all. What is in it for me? I mean, that was a question about the, I mean, Korach still was a lady, but that's about Aviram. Yes, they were Ali Machlokas. Regardless, their issue, the whole mm-hmm. issue also was that, what about us?
Mm-hmm.
So to say now that the growing of the Matos is going to quell the Machlokas, I think it has to the final.
I mean, well, you see from the story, apparently. I mean, the Raya of the Baal Musaf, you see from the story that, as opposed to the punishment, this worked. You're asking, why did it work? Right, your question is the next step. You see from the story, it worked, right?
No question.
Because that's all we're trying to say. As you're asking, why did it work? Okay, that's a good question. Maybe we'll see, you know, a few more thoughts to maybe help explain what, you know, what was being taught here. That we'll get to that shortly. But at least see from the parsha that it did work. I remember in pastoral psychology, we had this professor, Bush. What's his first name? Not Robert. Rabbi Asher Bush. Robert Baruch Bush. Right. You know, big in conflict resolution.
Big alternative dispute resolution.
Correct. Right. Big in conflict resolution. Right. Mediation. Very big in that. What? Hasha? Okay. Right. So they brought him to teach a semester long course. What? Yeah. So his entire yesod in this course was, is that if people come to you for, you know, for dispute resolution, never, ever, ever listen to both sides and then say, okay, you're right, you're wrong, or, you know, this is what we're going to do, and this is how I'm going to work it. He said, dispute resolution, a dispute, he said, is always stems from, you know, feelings of animosity, of resentment. He said, maybe with your imposed solution, you'll get them to function with one another, you know, according to a certain agreed upon plan. But you're not going to ever cure the feelings of resentment and hurt and bitterness by imposing resolution or solution upon two people, even if in your mind it's correct and fair, unless you first deal with the underlying feelings. And that, he felt, you know, couldn't be done by imposing solution. Had to be done by allowing them to come to, you know, constructive discussion of the issues of the feelings, and on their own, you know, you kind of like you facilitate their own coming to a conclusion. If I summarize that correctly, you know, entire semester's course, but his basic episode was that imposing solutions never, ever, ever solves the animosity and the bitterness that really underlies the dispute. That's similar to what we're saying over here. Yes, Achie, had a question? In the beginning.
No, instead of killing off the two.
Good question. I guess they were. I guess they're deserving of misa, because people were deserving of punishment also. So I guess they deserve that as well.
I thought that they were deserving of misa because they. I mean, they have the good intentions, but it was because they put the Torahs. So then they were that really made them deserving of misa. No. In other words, if they had the good intentions, why not just say?
No, so I think the good intentions were recognized, but you still have no right to reach for that which you're not entitled to reach for. And they knew that they would be risking death by bringing the Ketores if they weren't allowed to do so, but they wanted to do it anyways. Okay. Okay. Now maybe getting to what Shalom had just raised a moment ago. Rabbi Simon, in his new volume on Sefer Bamidbar, quotes the following pshat from, I think, one of the Biala Rebbe's as to what the mistake of Korach was. He says that, you know, we all know that Chazal tell us that there are 248 mitzvahs aseh, 365 mitzvahs los aseh, that correspond to what? Ramach HaEvarav, Shasah Gidav, the different parts of a person's body. And the idea being that for every mitzvah, you perfect a different part of the body through that performance of that mitzvah. So the obvious question that he asks is, well, one second, not every mitzvah can I do. Some mitzvahs are for Kohanim, some are for Levim, some are for, you know, for Yisraelim. So if you tell me that every mitzvah corresponds to perfecting a different part of my body, how am I supposed to do that? It doesn't work. The answer apparently is that just like in the human body, there are different avarim that have different functions, and eyes can only be used for seeing and not for eating, and a mouth can only be used for eating and not for seeing. And yet each one, because it's part of the body, contributes to the body in a critical way. So to Klal Yisrael as a whole, all contribute to one another's perfection by each doing their own mitzvot that they are given to do. And so the mistake of Korach was that when he saw what Aaron was given, he mistakenly viewed that as an indication of Aaron's greater significance in this world than him. Now, Aaron's given more mitzvahs, more duties, more kahuna, that means he's better than I am. So he was bitter, he was jealous, he was upset. When in fact, the fact that one person has one set of responsibilities in Klal Yisrael, another person has a different set of responsibilities in Klal Yisrael, does not in any way indicate one person has greater chashivas than the other. It's simply the gzeiras HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that this is what each one contributes to the organic whole that is Klal Yisrael. Same way the eyes and the mouth, neither one is more significant. Each one contributes critically to what a person needs. So to in Klal Yisrael, each Kohen Levi Yisrael contributes critically to what a person needs. That's what Korach misunderstood, and he viewed it as a sign of Aaron's greater chashivas, hence his jealousy. His mistake was, is that's not a sense of, it's not an indication of greater chashivas, it's simply division of roles and responsibilities, but each one is just as significant as the other. Yeah, in that sense it does, right? The division of roles is the key trigger there, right? Correct. Right. Same idea. Right, I mean, the same way, men have more mitzvahs than women, and Kohanim have more mitzvahs than Yisraelim, and Levim have more mitzvahs than Yisraelim. So, right, should we start the Yisraelim liberation movement, you know, to try and get ourselves a role in the Beis Hamikdash also? You're right. The idea being is that, no, because every person contributes through his own assigned assignments to the greater good of Klal Yisrael.
Where, in what to justify that guys on top of rip off as much as possible.
Or what?
To justify the guys on top of rip off as much as possible. Well, we make a nice story to feed the masses.
Are you a Marvin, are you a Cohen wannabe?
It sounds like,
Well, before you get all waxed and nostalgic about the Kohanim Levim, hang on one second. One more part. Shimshon Pinkus writes, Shimshon Pinkus said the following pshat. Rav lechem b'nei Levi. Moshe says to Korach, Rav lechem b'nei Levi. What does that mean? What does that mean? And I'm saying this for a reason, Marvin. Hang on one second. What does Rav lechem b'nei Levi mean? So, Rashi says, you've taken on a very serious business here, trying to argue on what God has decided. But the Sfarno has a fascinating pshat. The Sfarno says, Rav lechem b'nei Levi means, you Korach followers, Dabar Godol Atem Matilim Aleichem, you're accepting tremendous responsibility upon yourselves, because God will be more angry upon you, since you are already Nivcharim La'avodaso, since you are already chosen to serve Him. Meaning the B'nai Levi that Moshe was talking to, he's saying to them, you're already B'nai Levi, you're already chosen by God to serve Him more than others. And for that reason, better watch out, God's going to punish you and be more angry at you than He would be at other Jews. What does that mean? So Pinkus explains this one as follows. He says, generally we tend to think that the closer I am to someone in power, the more flexibility I have, the more relaxed I can be, the less liability I have to worry about. Right? If I do something wrong, well, I've got, close friends in high places, they'll cut me some slack. I don't have to worry about it as much. Whereas, some guy off the street does the same thing. He'll get slapped with a fine. He'll get slapped with a prison sentence. He won't get the slack because he's a nobody. Says Shimshon Pinkus, when it comes to Avodah Hashem, it's just the reverse. The closer we are to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the more responsibility and the more liability we have. So Moshe is saying to B'nai Levi, Rav lechem, you better watch out. You guys already are chosen to a certain extent by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God's going to be angrier at you than He would be at somebody else. Because the closer you are to God, the more responsibility for Kiddush Hashem you have, and the more liability for Chil Hashem you have. And therefore, you really got to be much more careful. The example he gives on a simple level is, going into the Beis HaKnesses. If some people go to Beis HaKnesses, three times a year, or, a handful of times a year. When they walk in, hopefully, they're maybe sometimes, much more respectful, quiet. They make sure to cover their heads, even though they usually don't. They're much more, in reverence. Us walking to shul every day, every morning, every evening, we're take it more easy. We're not so impressed by the aura of the Beis HaKnesses. So that's unfortunate. It should be the reverse. The closer we have to go to Baruch Hu, the more frequent we visit, the more seriously we have to take it, and the more seriously God will judge us, God forbid, if we don't take it seriously. So I guess getting back to what you're saying before, Marvin, before waxing nostalgic about the Kohanim and Levim. There's a second side to the coin also. As they have greater liability that comes with a greater responsibility.
Basically, bottom line is Judaism does not believe in privacy. And Judaism believes in open genetic code.
It believes in genetic code not as a sign of superiority, but as a sign of division of roles. Yes. Correct. Good?
We're not communists.
Listen, Judaism believes in Malchus, right? That's not democracy. Now, except according to Barbanel, that asking for a Melech is actually not advisable because you're supposed to have democracy. You'd be right. But according to Rav Rishon, that Malchus is a good thing. That means, you're right, there's no democracy. There is Malchus, there's Kahuna, there's Leviya, and then there's Yisraelim. But again, not because they are inherently superior. They just have a different division of responsibilities, that's all.
Wouldn't it be pretty I'll get personal. Wouldn't it be pretty sad if the rabbis could only come from one tribe?
Okay.
I mean,
Torah is open to everybody. That's that example. Right? Kesser Kuna, Kesser Levia, Kesser Malchus. Those are for genetically determined people.
I can't argue with
but
that.
Torah is for anybody. That's a bad example.
Theoretically.
Okay.
Right. I mean, it happens.
Hard to imagine.
It's not a Torah, that's just where that is. But it's kind of like, I can't argue the fact that is in the Chumash. However,
but let me say one thing. It's not purely genetically determined because it was earned. It's not genetically determined. It was earned as a reward for all of their genetic descendants. So it's not as bad as you're making it out. You should blame your great-great-grandfather, and I'll blame mine. And, you know, put it at their footsteps, at their feet. It's their fault. That's what it comes down to.
Had an honor, I think, which is good.
What?
I
had our honor in it.
Pinchas, though.
Pinchas was able to. He hadn't been included. He hadn't been included, but he then became included. Okay, that's a good question. Why did Aaron deserve it? I'm not sure. Maybe it goes back to what he did back in Mitzrayim. I don't know. I'm not sure. Yeah, maybe his own mice back in Mitzrayim had played a part in it. But it's not as bad as making it up. Blame the granddaddies. Okay, but one last thought, and then they'll close up. Yeah.
Just remember.
Yes.
Ridden also believes in this, and they have.
What's that one?
Ridden also believes in this, and they have the House of Lords, which I think is absurd.
Good. Okay.
Think about the fact that you have.
But what earned them that distinction? Their brute force, their money. That's not what earned Kohanim their distinction. Every Jew had the right and option to do what the Kohanim did. They didn't. It wasn't circumstantial, you know, happenstance that, you know, oh, he has money, he's a lord, I'm a peasant. It was, everyone had equal opportunity to choose Mila Hashem Elai, and the Levim chose it, not anybody else. Blame the granddaddy.
You know, we have Shemitah.
Wow, you really love your granddaddy, don't you? Okay.
We have Yovel where it isn't blaming Dad if the land left.
Give it back.
No, it's not like to say don't blame granddad for everything because we believe we somewhat start the game over on some level at Rosh Hashanah, whereas this is saying that the game was played once and we're stuck with it for all time.
Okay. You never know what your decisions carry in years to come. You're right. That's the lesson. You never know what weight your decisions carry in years to come. Okay, it is scary. That's important. One last point on Rav Lechem B'nei Levi. Shem Shem Pinkas says, a beautiful vort. He says, Rav Lechem B'nei Levi, look at what's happening here, he says. Moshe has just been challenged by these rebellious individuals who are, you know, Justin and Aviram hate him. They're challenging his leadership. And what's his musr? Rav Lechem B'nei Levi. His musr is Rav Lechem B'nei Levi, meaning, as Sforno says, you have so much yichus already. Isn't this beneath you? Isn't this something you shouldn't be doing? Meaning he's appealing to their milos, to their stature, and saying, this is not appropriate behavior becoming of someone as worthy and as chashuv as you. Reminds me of Abraham Twersky's book about his family recollections. I think it's called From Generation to Generation, where he writes that his father, whenever he would give his sons musr, as children, would say it's pasnished. No, it's not. It's beneath you. It's beneath you. Because you're above that. Also, a very beautiful lesson in Musar. They see from Moshe Rabbeinu here, according to Shem Pinkas, and when giving Musar to even to these Yerushalayim, who are going to be Chayav Misa ultimately, he said, Rav Lechem B'nei Levi, it's not befitting someone of your stature, B'nei Levi. You're so close to Kadosh Baruch Hu as is already. It's not befitting you. You can, you know, you, we expect it, and you can produce more than that and better than that than what you're doing here. Okay. Well, wonderful Shabbos, everybody. Thank you for coming. No share next week. Correct. Thank you.